welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the Pot of Thunder and Rock and Roll. And today, it's all about Ozzy, man. Ozzy Osbourne, man. The classic album Clash returns with a battle over which Ozzy album reigns supreme, Diary of a Madman or Blizzard of Oz. And the panel debating the merits of each record and song includes myself, of course, my Fozzy bandmates Rich Ward, Frank Fonseray, Billy Gray, and special guest, the editor of Metal Hammer magazine and huge Chris Jericho Fozzy friend and fan, Merlin Alderslade. How great of a name is that? Merlin Alderslade. If you're from England and your name is Merlin Alderslade, that makes you like better than a knight. It's awesome. We're all huge Ozzy fans, and you'll find out how we all discovered Ozzy in the first place. Hear about the first time we saw him live. We talk Randy Rhoads, guitar solos, how Randy and Ozzy changed heavy metal music and rock in general. We've got tons of trivia and info on the technical aspects of Ozzy's recording and songwriting. So much cool stuff. It's a great conversation and debate about one of metal's biggest icons, Ozzy Osbourne, and two of metal's greatest records, Blizzard of Oz and Diary of a Madman. But before we get started with the great classic album Clash, let me say a big thank you to everyone who checked out my new show on Octane, a Sirius XM Octane, Rock of Jericho, debuted Friday night. And if you missed the first show, you can check it out again tomorrow, Thursday at 10 p.m. Eastern on Octane. I believe that's channel 37 or something like that. Sirius XM, The Rock of Jericho returns on Octane. Lots of buzz, lots of good times. We're doing it every month. We might move to twice a month, though, just for you guys. But every show, I'll have a brand new new action-packed lineup featuring an hour of hand-picked heavy metal and hard rock. And tonight, speaking of heavy metal, the home of heavy metal, the UK, I'm in London, England for the Words of Jericho tour. It's been such a great show, great time. Glasgow sold out 2 nights ago. Manchester sold out last, and London is on the way to selling out. Fun stories from my entire career. Music, wrestling, rock and roll, Paul McCartney, Keith Richards, great Aussie Sharon stories, Vince McMahon, all across the board, Undertaker, Ralphus. I'm telling you stories behind the scenes. You ain't never heard these stories before. London, tonight at the Clapham Grand London. Still some tickets available, but we'll see you all there. And then, as if that's not enough Jericho, Fozzy's getting ready to hit the road again with the Judas Rising Tour Part 4, I think it is. Starting up in August, we got Adelita's Way, The Stir, and Stone Broken joining us this time around. We got a bunch of gigs before then as well. I'm going to run them down for you. July 12th, Rock USA in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. July 13th, the Cadot Rock Fest in Cadot, Wisconsin. Or is it Cadot? I'm not sure. The 14th, Peoria Riverfront in Peoria, Illinois. 15th is Belvedere, Illinois at the Apollo Theater. Then we go to Europe for July 26th, the Fezzen Festival in Hungary. Excited about that. Then we're doing Prague, the Rock of Ages Festival in Germany, Zurich, Rock Planet in Italy, Slovenia, Wacken in Germany, Berlin, Bochum, Aschaffenburg, Leyendas de Rock Festival in Alicante, Spain on August 9th, Alcatraz in Belgium, August 11th, and then returning to the UK, Bloodstock at Canton Park in Walton-on-Trent, Derbyshire on August 12th. And then we come back to the States once again for the Judas Rising Tour with Adelita's Way, starting off August 24th in Atlanta. Then we got Huntsville, Clarksville, Little Rock, Joliet, Illinois, Omaha, Des Moines, Minneapolis, Fargo, St. Louis, Indianapolis, Fort Wayne, Columbus, Ohio, Cincinnati, Louisville, Charlotte, Jacksonville, North Carolina, Huntington, West Virginia, Greenville, South Carolina, Savannah, Lake Buena Vista, Tampa, Fort Lauderdale, Jacksonville, Florida, Rock Allegiance in Camden, New Jersey, October 6th. Go to FozzyRock.com for all ticket information and all VIP information. We do one of the best VIPs in the business. We do a special concert just for the VIPs. So go check that out, FozzyRock.com. And in the meantime and in between time, let's keep the rock and roll going with the Ozzy Osbourne classic album Clash. It's Blizzard versus Diary, and it starts now.
Okay, so we're sitting on the top of a double-decker bus here, and this is, first of all, we're in Newcastle, and it's Rich and Frank and Billy Fozzy, and the most heavy metal name of all time, Merlin Alderslade.
Thank you very much for having me, sir.
He's now graduated to the editor of Metal Hammer magazine.
I know.
Is used. At first, I think you were just a squire, like you used to get me
coffee. I think that was my official term, yeah.
Squire. Yeah, that's a very English term. But we're sitting, the last time you heard from the Foz, we were on the Roach Coach bus in the States. Not the worst bus we've had, but not the best. This one is the best bus that we've ever had.
Yeah,
and the best driver, Paul.
This is pretty nice.
Best driver, Paul, we've ever had over here in Europe. A great bus, and things are going well.
Not Paul DeLeo, by the way. He's not driving.
That's Paulie D. And we actually have a lounge at the front of the bus, and we're looking at the Tyne River, Merlin has told us. And we're getting ready to do the classic album Clash, which, as you remember, is a debate over which one of these two albums is the better of the two albums. And we're talking about Blizzard of Oz and Diary of a Madman by Ozzy Osbourne. And this started with you and me, didn't it, Merlin? We were texting.
Yeah, we were talking about, I think we were starting off on Maiden albums and then we moved off to Ozzy albums. And then at some point you said, we should actually do a thing on this because we're both big Ozzy fans and we have a couple of different opinions, I think, on this. So
what we're going to do in this case, it's basically a track by track, and we'll get into that in a second. So we're going to eliminate D because D is track number 9 and it doesn't fit. And it's a great little guitar noodling, doodling thing, but that it's not up for review. So we're going for the basic 8 tracks. So talk about when you first heard these records, Frank.
So is this like an opening argument, like if you were an attorney?
We're just
like
going to explain a little bit about the records and, you know, a little bit about the relationship that you have with both these records. Because like we did the last one with Brian Posehn and Frankie Kazarian with Ride the Lightning and Master Puppets, we both agree they're classic records. And it's, you know, by a hair which one is quote-unquote better. But let's talk about the history of these albums with our individual lives. Frank, go ahead.
Do you want to not mention which one I think is better?
No, you don't mention that first, no.
Okay. Well, I'll probably end up revealing it anyway.
Well, can. Just do what you want. There's no rules here.
Okay.
Talk is Jericho. It's not Nazi Jericho. It's Talk is Jericho.
So Diary of a Madman was my introduction, really, to Ozzy. You know, when Sabbath was at their peak, I was a big Kiss freak, and Kiss, like, was my entire world, and nothing else existed to me. So, I mean, you know, I knew of Black Sabbath, you know, and I knew of some of the songs and everything. I had an awareness of them, but, you know, I hadn't delved into the albums and everything. So, by the time Ozzy started his solo career, I didn't really know a whole lot about him until I started hearing stuff from Diary on the radio and bought the record and thought it was fantastic. And that was kind of my introduction to Ozzy. So I hadn't really heard Blizzard, you know. So, yeah, that it was like 81. And one of the things I remember specifically about that era, not necessarily about the album, but I remember I had broken my arm and I had to be in the hospital for like a week, and I remember being driven home from the hospital and the radio was on, and I think it was either Flying High Again or either that or Over the Mountain, and I was digging the song because I'd heard it and I was like, yeah, I love this song, you know. And then
probably Flying High Again, that was like the single that was on the radio at least in Canada.
It may have been.
Yeah.
And I just remember after the song, the DJ saying something to the effect of, yeah, that was Flying High Again or whatever by Ozzy Osbourne, dedicated to guitarist Randy Rhoads, who was just killed yesterday in a freak plane crash. And I was like, whoa, man, that's heavy. I mean, I didn't really know who Randy Rhoads was at the time. I just knew he was the guitar player for this Ozzy Osbourne guy. But just that's a very specific memory attached to that record. I don't know if I already had the record or bought it subsequently, but I just remember, you know, unfortunately, you know, one of the events in my becoming aware of like Ozzy and becoming a fan and everything was hearing about, you know, the death of Randy Rhoads. Mm-hmm. And then it was like, oh, I need to figure out who these people are, you know.
So there's a little bit of age differences. I mean, we're similar ages, Frank and Billy and Rich, but Merlin's a little bit younger. So how did you get hip to these records?
Yeah, I was going to say, I came into it a bit Oz Backwards, I think, because the first Ozzy song...
Oz Backwards?
Oz Back, very good. Very good, sir. Because I remember I actually picked up, funny enough, an issue of Metal Hammer in, I think it was around 2000. And it had a free VHS on it. Glory days.
A free VHS?
I know, right?
Wow.
Glory days. And
those.
I know. It's crazy. And I knew piss all that was on it. One of the songs that was on there was a live recording of Perry Mason from Ozfest from the late 90s. So I went out and got Osmosis. That was actually the first Ozzy album I ever got. I thought it was a great album. Still think it's one of the most underrated Aussie albums going. I love it.
I can give you that. It gets a little bit too 90s grungy.
I'm down with that. I'm
but
fine
like
with that.
Thunder Underground and
oh, I love that tune. Like Perry Mint is great. Like there's so many.
My Jekyll Don't Hide is
yeah. And then so first thing I did went straight to I can't remember what record shop it was. Went into a record shop. First thing I saw on the Aussie was an album called Tribute, which of course is the live album with Randy, one of the greatest live albums of all time. Went and picked that up, played it, thought it was absolutely incredible. You know, I'm very much of a new metal generation, and I'd never heard guitar playing like that before in my life.
Interesting.
You just don't get that with Taproot. So I was like, this is amazing.
From a new metal standpoint, there really wasn't guitar playing.
I had no reference point for that kind of stuff. And then
you are a young man, aren't you?
Yeah, sorry about that. So from there, I became a Randy Rose fanatic and went straight out and got those first two Aussie albums and a lot of other stuff off the back of that as well.
Rich?
Yeah, I have a similar kind of experience as Frank in that I discovered Ozzy through his solo material, not Black Sabbath. I was familiar with Sweet Leaf. I was familiar with Iron Man and Paranoid because they were on the radio. But at that point in time, I was more of a rock guy, meaning I really liked what was on the radio, which would have been Boston and Kansas and Rush, Styx and Journey and Ted Nugent, AC/DC, ZZ Top, Led Zeppelin, Hendrix, The Who. That was kind of the staple of the rock music that I was exposed to, because Atlanta was not a heavy metal market. It was a rock market. So Sammy Hagar was seriously heavy. Like, there's only one way to rock. I was like, that's heavy. And then, so listening to, I heard Crazy Train. I was aware of that, you know, era. But it's still at that time, I think I had just kind of was discovering Maiden and Priest at the same time. And for some reason in my mind, I was a little more attracted to Maiden and Priest than I was Blizzard at that time, because at that moment in my life, I was looking for what was the darkest, heaviest. You know, I was like that kid looking for those things that was taboo, right? You know, because we're pressing our boundaries and limits with our parents and society. And although I thought Crazy Train was a great song, it seemed a little more rock to me than listening to, you know, some of the Wrathchild by Iron Maiden and things that seemed a little more dirty and seemed a little more dangerous. But I later, when Diary came out, that record was so different from... People a lot of times will say that Blizzard and Diary are a lot alike, but I don't think so at all. I think there's a complexity to Diary. There's also something. The album is much more polished. I can't say because I wasn't there. It seems like there was more time taken in the recording process.
But they were recorded at basically the same time, weren't they?
There was a few months in between.
Yeah, they weren't like the same session. Okay, they were recorded very close together, but not the same session.
Gotcha. And it when I listened to Blizzard, the precision of Randy's guitar playing on the rhythm parts doesn't seem like he was given as much time. Because when you listen to Diary, there is an execution on that record where it's not that Randy got better. You know, when you and I are in this, we all been in the studio. We know what making records is. The difference between something that's the execution is there is not necessarily anything more than just having a little more time to fine tune it. And remember, this is a band on their second record, and after a little bit of touring, they're all of a sudden coming of age and they're discovering who they are. And Randy is all of a sudden blossoming as a player too. Because I mean, a song like No Bone Movies would never appear on Diary, because all of a sudden they went from a rock and roll band into something that was darker and more composed and more orchestral, something that felt like what happens if Meatloaf had sold a soul to the devil. You know, like there's these songs that felt like they could be Broadway performances, right? I mean, Ozzy's doing these amazing, you know, so I really, I love both records, but they are different albums, which I've, I listened to them both with headphones last night and I made notes because I wanted to hear them with the ears of to have this discussion. And I was really shocked and taken back about how different those albums are.
I get a sense of what side of the debate you're going to kind of come on as we go along.
I love them both because they both do something different, right?
Right, similar
to Ride the Lightning and Master Puppets. It's like, they're both excellent, but
the maturing is the same between the two albums, between Ride Master and Blizzard and Diary, for sure.
Yeah, it's almost as if with Blizzard of Oz, he wanted to musically kind of separate himself from Black Sabbath, because it's a lot more, like you said, of a rock record. I don't want to say poppy or anything, but the subject matter is not as dark as on Blizzard.
Yeah, yeah. Steal Away the Night, No Bone Movies.
Right. There's not as much of kind of the occultish little touches, especially with like the album design and everything else. So I think he was trying to,
kind of disagree with that.
Well, I mean, to some degree, you know, he is Ozzy.
He does have a Rams skull or something like that on there.
But lyrically and song wise, I mean, it doesn't really evoke that kind of thing if you're just listening to the music, like Crazy Train and I Don't Know, are kind of personal songs as opposed to, about demons and, stuff like that.
And let me jump on what he's saying really quick, is that I think what I agree with what Frank is saying, except for that I think that they were fine-tuning it.
Right.
So even though there was Mr. Crowley and there's an occult stuff that's happening on Blizzard of Oz, it's that self-realization. When you do things over and over and you start to, you write a song like Mr. Crowley and then all of a sudden it clicks. We've done that. Mm-hmm. We wrote Lights Go Out. We were like, boom. All of a sudden then that plants seeds for future songs because you realize that you've tapped into something that works for you, that ticks all the boxes of who you are as an artist and what we did that really connected.
Right. Billy, how'd your come with relationship with these albums?
I started in junior high school when I heard Flying High Again on the radio with my mom in the car, and that was around the time that Ozzy had bitten the head off of a bat. So they were talking about it on the radio, and my mom was like, oh, that's so stupid. And I was like, well, Mom, let's hear the song. So, the song came on, and just the hauntingness of the guitar tones and the way Randy used the phase effects and just Ozzy's melodies just got me on that. And
were you playing guitar at that time already?
Yes, I was.
Because Rich will tell you that back in high school, Billy Gray was the gunslinger in Charlotte, right?
Billy Gray was the best guitar player of our age group in the city of Charlotte. And we went to different schools, and yet I had still heard of Billy Gray. And the reason I heard about Billy Gray is that he could play Eruption and he could play Randy Rhoads solos. And that's unheard of in my circle of friends. Like, we were still learning Mick Mars and AC/DC. Like, we were in the basics. Hey, AC/DC and Mick Mars is badass.
Oh, yeah.
But that's the foundation. Hey, Billy had evolved past. He was playing technical stuff that most 13-year-olds and 14-year-olds in our little circle of friends didn't. And it was always talked about. You're in a town, like, hey, that guy, he can play Eruption. Holy crap.
You're still sitting there going, da, da, da,
yes.
Da,
and not even that good.
Billy, continue, but first I want to say, how long did, when you were practicing these riffs and the solos, did it take you a long time to figure them out?
Yeah, it took me a long time. I got lucky. My dad had a little tape recorder, so I would tape it off the radio, and on the tape recorder was a slowdown button, so I could slow down the solo and learn it note for note, or as close to it as I could get, and then speed it up and just practice a lot. So I used to practice all the time. All my friends were out there breaking in houses and shooting windows out with BB guns. And my family, my dad was like, no, you're going to stay home tonight. You're not going out tonight. So I was like, okay, cool. I'll just practice guitar. It worked out really well. And
you're taking a break from breaking into houses tonight.
Yes,
son.
Yeah. I just remembered they all got busted one time for freaking shooting out a bunch of windows on Christmas. And I walked up. I'd been out of town, so I walked up, and everybody was... The police were driving up, and I was like, well, I better turn around and go this way because I wasn't involved in this.
Yeah.
But it was all because of Randy Rhoads and guitar and Eddie Van Halen and rock and roll.
Did you get into Randy before he passed away or after?
Actually, after. Because it was around the same time. Like, soon after the bat-biting incident happened, then that's when the plane crash happened, which actually was on my birthday, on my 12th birthday.
No kidding.
Yeah, it happened.
Wow, was it December 18th?
March 19th is when he passed away.
I was way off.
Yeah, 82. So,
wow.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So you always have that that date in your mind.
Yes, for sure. And you know, the difference between those two albums, Blizzard and Diary, to me, there is a definite hauntingness on the Diary record, and a definite, you could tell they spent time, like Richie said, and it's darker. And a fact that I've learned is on Blizzard of Oz, they tuned in standard tuning.
all the songs are written in standard tuning. On Diary, they dropped it down a half step.
Really?
Yes. All the songs are dropped down a half step.
To make it sound heavier?
Which makes it, well, to adapt to Ozzy's voice.
Oh.
And it actually, you know, it does make it sound, it's lower, so kind of goes a bit heavier. So, yeah, that's a little fact about that.
So, for me, as we play revolving microphones, we're a good team here.
I can't tell.
I was a huge, and I think I've told this story to you guys before, but I was a huge Beatles fanatic when I was in elementary school and even into grade 7. And when I say fanatic, I knew everything about the Beatles. I knew all the albums. I knew all the trivia. Stuff that we talk about now, I knew it when I was like 11 or 12. When I went to junior high school, it wasn't cool to be a Beatles fan. And I remember I'd even made a Beatles t-shirt out of a picture that I cut out of the newspaper, black and white, and got that old school silk screen printing on there, and people would laugh at me. Like, so as crazy as that sounds, it was not cool to be a Beatles fan, right? And I saw all the chicks that I liked had Priest, Maiden, or Ozzy shirts. And I was like, if I ever have any chance of getting a date, I got to go check out one of these bands. So I went down to Red River Comics down in Winnipeg, and I went and I looked and I saw Blizzard of Oz cassette for $2, and I bought it. And I put it on, and right off the bat, I was like, oh my gosh, this is great. And then it hits Goodbye to Romance, and I'm like, this is a Beatles song. Like, I get the connection. Like, oh, this is just this is like the Beatles influenced this guy, too. So that's how I got. And then Winnipeg is an Aussie town. Like, people love Aussie in Winnipeg. And I remember when I went to Ukrainian summer camp with my cousin Chad and Todd, that there was this little kid running around going, because it was right when Blizzard came out, Crazy Dream. Before, I was a fan. I just, I'm like, what is this kid doing? It's driving me nuts. So when I finally heard Blizzard a couple years later, I was like, oh, that's what that kid was doing. He must have heard, But everybody loved Ozzy in Winnipeg. And I remember we even had a seance one night, and Sharon Warecki was a Randy Rhoads fanatic. And this is years after he died, because I got into this about, not years, but 83 maybe, I guess, so a year or two. And she tried to invoke the spirit of Randy Rhoads. And she claims that a hair fell from the ceiling, a blonde hair that was like, so it was like,
wow, that's entirely possible.
Sharon Warecki, yeah, and she had the Randy Rhoads hair. And that was always the thing where, like, Randy Rhoads was this mythical guy because he had died so young. And, of course, I really had never seen him play, never had the chance to see him play, but then started, like, following his work. Did you guys, anybody here ever see Randy play?
Nope.
Never got to see him play live, no.
Okay. So, and those two records, which is Blizzard of Oz, which came out on September 20th, 1980 in the UK, and March 27th, 1981 in the United States. Diary of a Madman came out November 7th, 1981. So in our country, or you know, not in Canada, I'm sure it was around the same time, both those records came out within 6 months. April, May, June, July, August, September, October, 7 months. Mm. How crazy is that?
Just a different time, man. Like,
yeah.
The rate of albums that came out in those days was just crazy when you look back on that era now compared to the idea of a band. I mean, Ozzy was a massive name still at that point, and the idea of someone just piling out albums one after the other, year after year after year, it's crazy. Of that quality as well.
Yeah, well, think about, you know, the early Kiss days where they put out an album every 6 months. The first six studio and two live albums that Kiss did were all within 6 months of each other.
Yeah, and that's the Beatles model. They do three albums in a year and three singles.
I think it's a good model, actually.
Well, I mean, geez, if you can write songs.
We'd have to convince fans that we're only going to put 8 songs on an album, though. That's the big thing.
That's true.
Of course.
That's true. Another thing I was remember, too, about Winnipeg is that I didn't go see the show because I still wasn't into it, but everyone coming back the next day after seeing the Diary tour, and everyone was buzzing how Ozzy hung the midget.
Yeah.
I specifically remember, like, Ozzy hung the midget, man. All the skids, like, the total, like, Winnipeg. Ozzy hung the midget, man. Did you see it last night? Holy shit, it was crazy. Yeah, man. Ozzy, man. Like, that's what you would hear all day long about Ozzy.
Did it work with the girls, by the way?
Actually, I remember Marcy Wood was the girl that I liked. And thank you. Shout out to Marcy Wood. And I remember trying to impress her by, I was listening to Mr. Crowley on my Walkman in the park. And obviously you couldn't hear it unless maybe, could you pull the speaker? So in my mind I could hear it. And I remember playing Mr. Crowley on her fingers, using her fingers as a keyboard. Hold your hand up, Billy. Oh, the other way. So I'd be like, wah, 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 like playing the keyboards on the fingers.
I mean,
like,
I'm turned on just looking at it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Just panty dropping. Never kissed her, actually went on a date with her, but I did try. That was my big pickup.
I was going to say, I wish I could have gone to the high school you went to, man.
Yeah, that same. Stuff, I was just thinking.
The high school I went to, that stuff would not have worked at all.
Super tight jeans and 3/4 baseball Aussie shirts was the uniform of the day for the hot chicks in the neighborhood.
Yeah, see, I went to a very preppy high school where, like, Ozzy Osbourne was not appreciated by the female population. So,
dude, I was into new metal, and let me tell you now, going into the baggy jeans and the baggy and dyeing my hair purple and spiking it up, that did no work.
Rich, you had a Diary shirt. You just posted the picture the other day after we saw Ozzy.
Yep, I had my the 12-year-old Rich Ward sporting my Diary of a Madman shirt, sleeves cut off. Yeah, I'd already started the uniform early. Yeah, because I was doing what all teenage or preteens are doing, which is you're pushing boundaries, right?
Yes.
I mean, Ozzy was back then, he was the equivalent of, you know, what Slayer became kind of at some point, which is that, oh my God. And then throughout history of rock, I mean, people are continuing, you know, I guess the Sex Pistols before Ozzy at some point.
Yeah.
But there was those things like you wore those things in order to proclaim that you're an outsider.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we, you know, find our place.
And Ozzy was such an everyman. Like, I think that's one of the reasons why Winnipeg liked it, because Winnipeg's very much a working collar, blue collar city. Like hockey and rock and roll and wrestling and beer and like Ozzy would, you know, like you said, he'd piss on the Alamo and get in trouble, and then, you know, he'd shave his head, or he'd show up one day and be like, you know, 30 pounds too heavy. Like, he was just a dude almost. Like, he was a rock star, but Ozzy was like our rock star. You know, there was no pretense with him at all.
Yeah. Still get that with him as well, even now. Like,
still seems that way, right?
Yeah, he was on a program called, have you ever seen Gogglebox? I don't know if you have like an American or Canadian equivalent. It's this program, reality TV show, where you watch people watching television. I know that sounds stupid.
Oh, really?
It's terrible.
It definitely sounds stupid.
It is stupid. And they did a celebrity one the other day, and Ozzy and Sharon were on it. And everything Ozzy said was just like everyone else was kind of playing along with it, kind of going, oh, this is a great show, or this is that and this that. And Ozzy was just there just going, this is rubbish. This is brilliant.
But like,
that was a terrible Birmingham accent. But
even though now, like, he's sober and he looks good now. He's cool hair and his. But back then, he'd be wearing like Indian buckskin trousers on stage, the gut hanging over, and like. And relatable, like I said, like Ozzy's drunk, or Ozzy, you know, he's just like, he looks like the guys in the crowd. When he shaved his head, you guys remember that?
I remember that.
He came back and had like a kind of an auntie haircut for a couple of years after that.
Yeah, but he just showed up, like, no one had bald head back then. No. Nobody.
You didn't if you were in a rock band back then, you did not.
Nobody
shave
had,
your
even
head.
If you were losing your hair, you'd pull Scorpions and
unless
put a hat on.
Unless you're the drummer for April Wine. That's
or Chris Slade.
Right.
You know? But it's like, do you know why he did that?
I think it's just a product of he's an alcoholic, terrible drug addict.
Yeah.
I think
yeah.
that's what people who are messed up do. They just do dumb things.
I'd be stunned if he knew why he shaved his head.
Yeah. He was probably drunk and just got to, you know, figure like, oh, shave me head, you know.
I'm thinking maybe he got his head caught in the hair caught in the door like in
really
16
boring.
Candles.
Like 16 candles.
So had to cut it out.
We should shout in my stock.
All right, let's go through the track by track here. So, and we both have our favorites, and we can kind of divulge that later on. But the idea that Merlin and I originally had, which kicked off this classic album clash, actually, was go song by song. It's a battle of each song. And some of them are hard. This is not easy, because they are sister albums. Blizzard starts off with I Don't Know, and Diary starts off with Over the Mountain. Rich, kick it off.
They're both perfect songs.
Yeah.
They're both A-plus songs. You can hardly find anything to pick apart. If I had to go with one song, it would be Over the Mountain. And the reason is just because of how brutally heavy it is by those standards in that day. I mean, Randy.
Covered by Fozzy.
And it was, and the other part of it was, again, tipping the hat to the Beatles, and apologies. All of his little changes always had that little Beatles musical thing,
yeah.
And it's a brilliant song. Whereas I Don't Know is a great song, but it's more of a rock song where Over the Mountain comes out of the gate with one of the most classic drum fills in all of rock and roll. Maybe Riding on the Wind is the, you know, of just really classic drum fills.
Where Eagles Dare.
Yes. And I really think that it's, and then also Over the Mountain, also, I think Randy's execution and his tone was there. He was the fully realized rock star at that point. Nothing against I Don't Know, but when I listened to it last night, I was shocked at how loose the moments were. Not in a bad way, but in the way that you hear on some Zeppelin or AC/DC
records.
There's
a screw up on the riff, isn't there?
Well, there's a few little bits here and there.
He does a little bit of a nuance.
And I noticed when he would do his slides, the slides didn't always go at the same time. And I think that came down to first record, right? Where, you know, Sharon's in a race, you know, Ozzy's in a race to get out there. And I think on when you just look at the entrance of both songs, I'm going to have to give it up for Over the Mountain.
Billy?
I'm going to go with Over the Mountain as well. That was actually the second Ozzy solo song I heard. And when I heard that, I was definitely completely blown away. I got into to Diary before I was even familiar with Blizzard. Mm-hmm. And just like Rich said, just the tones of the guitar and the melodies and all the musical changes, they hooked me off the bat. And then when Randy hit the guitar solo, it was like nothing I'd ever heard before. And it really blew me away.
How about the stops in the solo?
Oh, God. It was the greatest, the way they composed that.
What do you call it when it's like, bow, 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 bow? Is that a tritone, or is that just an interesting way to play a solo?
Yeah. It's just an interesting way to...
Flat five.
Interesting way to play flat five.
Yeah,
and he did harmonies in it as well. He overdubbed those harmonies and made it really haunting. And just, I'm going Over the Mountain, but I do love I Don't Know as well, because when I heard that and heard the opening riff, I was blown away by it. And they used to open with it, you know, a lot as well. So when I saw Ozzy a few times, he opened with I Don't Know, which is a great song as well. So
I'm going to give it to I Don't Know. I think it's the quintessential Ozzy song, and it seems weird to me when he doesn't open the show with it. We just saw him last week in Sacramento. He opens with Bark at the Moon, and it's not right. It's like when Kiss doesn't open with Deuce or Detroit Rock City, it just doesn't fit for me. And that riff, and once again, it's the first Ozzy song I ever heard, because that's the first tape that I had of Ozzy, and I just remember hearing this like gong, like a gong kicks off that song. Like, how 80s is that? It's a lot of fun to sing, and it's a lot of fun to watch Ozzy sing. I think it's a great solo. Once again, Over the Mountain is awesome too. Fozzy covered it on her first record, but I'm going to give the edge to I Don't Know. Merlin?
Yeah, I'm going to backfire that now as well. It's interesting hearing you guys come at it from a real musician's point of view and talking about how Randy perfected his craft, and kind of you could tell that they built on stuff going into that second record, which I definitely agree with. I don't actually think the two songs are that dissimilar in those opening riffs. It's that kind of like digga 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 thing. But to me, like, I think I Don't Know, it's just a bit purer. It's a bit more straight on. It's got less dicking about in it.
Yep.
And to be honest, what Chris was
dicking about.
Yeah. So to use what I think is the technical term. And what I probably will go back to a lot again is that tribute album, because when you hear him play those songs live, the first song on that album is I Don't Know, and it comes off that I can't remember what the piece is, but that famous piece
da,
where it's like
da, da,
yeah,
da,
ha, ha, ha.
Yeah.
And then
is
you
that
hear
what it's called? Yeah.
Yeah, cool, yeah. And then you hear Ozzy just go rock and roll, and he goes straight into that riff, and it's just like, oh, that's as good as it gets.
Only so, Ozzy can get away with opening a show, but just like
no, right?
Go crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Frank?
You're both wrong. I got to give it to Over the Mountain, far and away for me. Again, I Don't Know, good song, not downing the song at all. It's a classic. It's been in the set, probably every set he's done. It's been in there for a reason. But to me, Over the Mountain is way better song. It's just, I could be influenced by the fact that it's one of probably the first song of his I heard. But first of all, being a drummer, the drumming is way better on Over the Mountain. I mean, that fill that opens it is just insane. I mean, every teenage drummer, when they heard that, it just spun their head around. And it's just got that little bit of a darker edge, more aggressive edge than I Don't Know. And Randy Rhoads' solos is one of my favorite guitar solos ever. I mean, it's one of my favorite songs ever. And I hate that it hasn't been in the live set since then, you know, and I can assume why.
But Ozzy can't sing it anymore.
Yeah, yeah. But
I mean, Ozzy's barely changed his sets for about 20 years now, to be fair to
you. Right.
Yeah, so. He never does, right.
But, and, you know, like on that tour live, they didn't, what was the name of the thing that he always uses, the Gregorian chant?
Carmina Burana.
Yeah, he didn't use that. He used the end of Diary of a Madman. He used that operatic piece at the end of Diary.
Was that the Diary of a Madman tour?
Yeah, that was the Diary of a Madman tour.
So you saw it with Brad Gillis?
No, I didn't. I've seen video of it. I didn't get to see it live. No.
Gotcha.
But, you know, using that and then, you know, go crazy and that, it's just like, dude,
that doesn't mix for me. To me, it's
you can't. No, you can't open a show better than that, man. That drum fill with the spark shooting out, and then, you know, that riff. I mean, that's just.
And I think we can. I think again. I think the reason that the three of us are seeing this is because, as young musicians, one of the reasons why Ozzy doesn't play any material off of Diary of a Madman is because it is complex.
Yeah.
And it is more difficult to pull off. And I think he'd rather play the rock music. Mm-hmm. Whereas
he'll stick Believer in the set every now and again.
Two shows and then dump it because it's very hard.
That's opportunity for Zach Wild to go weeing over it.
And I think that's part of it is the idea that they were also in the same race that everybody was, with one-upmanship. That's the 80s was all about, you know, being better than Motley Crue and Van Halen. Everyone was wanting to be the best. And that diary, when Over the Mountain came out, you knew that they went back the same way that Black Sabbath did on.
That's what I think. I don't think he was up against Crue and Rat. He was up against Sabbath. Against Ronnie James Dio's
That's
Sabbath.
Right. Yeah, exactly. The same thing.
He wanted to beat them.
Goodbye to Romance says it all, man. It's in the lyrics right there.
Yeah, right.
Rich, I just have to ask you, on Over the Mountain, on the second and third verse, when he's doing the 16th note, just strum, and the second and third verse, he adds that little accent. But like one time it's off the snare. The first time he does it, it's off the snare drum. And the second time he does it, it's on the snare drum. You think that was just a mistake that it turned out cool and they left it? Or you think that was intentional?
I think on that record, that it sounds like they rehearsed more. It sounds like the album, the material was rehearsed. That was probably something that happened in rehearsal. And that, you know, that sounds like something he worked out because it was super tight.
And that's one of the characteristics that makes me love that song. Is just like each verse isn't a carbon copy of the other one musically. You know, it's like it has that little bit of difference. Each one has that.
All right, let's
bit
go
of
into the singles from the record. Another hard choice of Crazy Train, the classic, which Fozzy has also recorded, versus Flying High Again. Frank, why don't you start that one?
I got to give it to Flying High Again, you know, even though Crazy Train is like his classic song. And again, it's not a bad song, but I just like Flying High Again better. And one of the things I don't like about the album version of Crazy Train is the 16th note pattern on the hi-hat. Sounds very just too... It doesn't drive.
So that's
you know?
That's real neat nip. Yeah, it's a... Well, I'm a... Say? It's a Kira DeJumbo over there.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Because they did change it for the live
show. Yeah, like Tommy Aldridge didn't do that. Like
so
when he would play.
You, explain it to the rest of us laymen here. What are you giving us an example of what you're of what
Bobby
the talking
it
about?
So they can understand.
Yeah. Yeah. So you know, 16th note pattern is 1E and a 2E and a 3E and a 4E and a chicka 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 chicka. Those are 16th. Yeah, he's playing 16th note.
Disco beat.
It's a disco beat. Chicka 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 chicka.
So they don't do that live.
No, live is just you know straight like quarter notes or eighth notes.
Gotcha.
And like so. If you listen to the difference, and also there's a big difference live where when he's doing the hits on the toms of ba-dum, ba-bum, bum, on the record, he's just hitting a bass note with it. And live, he's hitting guitar chords of ba-dum, ba-dum.
Oh,
ba-dum.
I see. Yep.
And when I hear the album version of Crazy Train now, I miss all that. I miss those big guitar chords.
I think that's fair. There is one of those songs where once you've seen it live enough times, you do go back and you're kind of waiting.
It's almost like listening to Rock and Roll Night from Kiss Alive and listening to the one that the from
all
Dress
the difference
Kill.
In the world.
Because even like the beginning, dun dun. He plays that little solo part.
Yeah, yeah.
Which stayed to this day.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which means that, as we all have acknowledged, is that sometimes you record a song on, in the studio, and you've left room for improvement. Some songs don't need improving; they're perfect on that. And Crazy Train, for me, same as both of you guys have always said, that the live version was always better,
way better.
And I think part of it was they just closed the door soon.
So you're taking Flying High Again as well?
Absolutely, has to be. And the reason is too is that. Crazy Train is a song about he's going crazy, right? And yet the verse is a major melody and a major guitar lick. Crazy, but that's how it goes. Doesn't, to me, the melody and the riff doesn't capture the concept of the song. It doesn't work for me. Millions of people.
It's a bit status quo, isn't it?
Just kind of it's like, a little. It is.
And you're saying the band status quo, not stock.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas Flying High Again. Oh no, oh, da,
here we
da.
Go.
It
now.
Sounds like you're high. Yeah. I mean, he captures the spirit of those lyrics, but even the band. I mean, everything about that, I think it captures it.
But come on, no, I'm not gonna worry. I've been a bad, bad boy. That's pretty major chords, too.
No.
Pretty happy.
No.
I mean, it's not. It's still minor.
Yeah.
But he's... But the other cool thing about it is that Bob Daisley, that... Like, all,
oh, he's,
I mean, he's
he,
walking
going
the dog.
Down like on that song.
Freaking... I mean, that's the thing about it is...
Walking the dog.
Yeah, you know,
that.
Like... Not, you're not,
I've never heard that before.
Oh, yeah. With the bass part. Yeah. Like, he's just walking the dog, man. You're like, go, Bob.
Daisley is smoking some ass
record,
on that song.
He
man.
Just said, you know what? You guys can suck it. And he just...
Well, he wrote the lyrics too, didn't he? Yeah. And the melodies, from what we understand.
And then they wrote him out anyway.
Yeah.
And also, the another point against the album version of Crazy Train is there's a vibra slap on that song, which does not belong in any rock song ever. Yeah, that little...
Billy?
For me, they're really close because the opening riff of Crazy Train is unstoppable. But I'm going to go Flying High Again because of the attitude, just all the sonic things that go on in the song with Ozzy's voice, the guitars, everything. And yeah, I'm going Flying High Again, even though Crazy Train runs a close second, as it has great riffs and everything as well.
How about the finger tapping in the solo?
Oh, yeah.
Middle finger to Eddie Van Halen.
Yes,
it
yes.
It was a shot
yes.
across the bow.
Yes, it was. And yeah, it you know, it got me.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And it was very melodic, too, the way he did it. It
as he
just,
always does.
It wasn't chaotic. It was very melodic. So I'm going Flying High Again.
I'm going in for Crazy Train. I think for very good points. I do agree that the album version has definitely become inferior to all the live versions out there. Again, Tribute was my first time I heard it, so I'm always going to go back to that.
Yeah,
absolutely. But I don't think that changes what a fundamentally brilliant song it is. I think it's one of the greatest opening riffs ever written. It does go a bit status quo on the verse, but when that chorus comes in, like, and they're like, going off the road, like, that is one of the single greatest lines that's ever been
still
put on.
Screaming.
Yeah, it's just so iconic. Like,
I think I see a pattern emerging here.
Well, let's find out. But yeah, I'm Crazy Train. I think you just can't.
I gotta join in that, Merlin, because it's like You Shook Me All Night Long or Pour Some Sugar on Me or Enter Sandman. You demean it because you've heard it so much. It is the Ozzy signature song that everybody knows, from my wife to the postman to all of us here.
Every sporting event play.
I think the solo in that song is just as good as the solo in Flying High Again. Once again, Flying High Again is a 9.9999999 and Crazy Train is a 10. And if I had a choice of listening to one or the other, I'd put on Flying High Again. But I have to go with Crazy Train. I have to go with Crazy Train.
And we're
Train.
Not saying that they're bad songs.
Of course
songs.
Not. No, no, no.
Yeah, of course not.
We're never saying that. Which is better? And to me, it's a hair, but I got to go with Crazy Train. Like you said, Billy, you're not going to hear Flying High Again at a Winnipeg Jets game. Or you might hear it at a Winnipeg Jets game, but you're not going to hear it at a Tampa Bay Lightning game. All right, then we get to the ballads of the record, so to speak, which would be Goodbye to Romance versus You Can't Kill Rock and Roll. Merlin, start this one off.
I think I'd probably give this, even though overall, as you'll probably find out, I'm probably leaning towards the other album overall, I'd probably give this to You Can't Kill Rock and Roll. Goodbye to Romance, I like the idea of it more than the song itself, because it's very much his goodbye to Sabbath and him singing about how he thought it was all going to go to shit after what happened there. So as a song, it's quite personal and I like what it's getting at, but it's just a little, probably one of the few weak points on Blizzard for me. It's a little bit wet, feels a bit shoehorned in as like the tokenistic ballad that you have to have at that point on the, a little bit wet.
It's like walking the dog for you,
exactly.
Wet for us.
Whereas You Can't Kill Rock and Roll, it's just got a bit more to it, like the midsection in it when Randy just goes off on one is unbelievable. So I'd probably just edge towards You Can't Kill Rock and Roll personally.
I'm going to continue that and go with You Can't Kill Rock and Roll, destroying Goodbye to Romance, because that song, it bothers me. I don't like it. I think that, once again, I understand what Ozzy was trying to do, but the opening chords of that just bother me. It's a skipper for me every time. And I remember... I used to smoke Old Port cigars, and those they're wine tipped and rum dipped is what they were called. They're little cigarillos with a plastic end. And for, I remember being in grade 8, and that was my big thing, just smoking Old Ports, never inhaling them, but just being cool and smoking Old Ports in my friend's basement. All my friends had girlfriends, and I did not. And I remember they would write, you know,
it's a theme going on.
Yeah, yeah. It was Jim Parsons and what was her name, Christine Hendricks. So it was JP and CH. And so and so and so and so. And I wrote CI plus OP, Chris Irvin plus Old Ports. And I remember listening to that song, just sitting in the back, like, leave me alone. Don't need your promises no more. Rock and roll is my religion and my law. And my law. It's not my lord. It's my law. Won't ever change. Won't rearrange. You can't kill rock and roll, you know. And just that hit me so hard of like, I don't need any chicks. All I need is this Old Port and this song, and I need this.
I don't need one more thing. I need this.
But yeah, so You Can't Kill Rock and Roll, and just the ending solo in that song, yeah, it's about a minute and a half of a fade out, and it just smokes. It's like so crazy. It starts as a ballad, but it ends as a rocker, much like Fade to Black or something along those lines. So to me, it's You Can't Kill Rock and Roll by a landslide.
I'm going to go You Can't Kill Rock and Roll as well. I do love the guitar solo, being a guitar player in Goodbye to Romance. Mm. I think it's awesome. But the rest of the song didn't touch me. And they even played You Can't Kill Rock and Roll a couple of times on the radio in Charlotte. So I would always crank it up when I heard that too. Oh, it's another great Ozzy song. And it was so dark and haunting. And the orchestration of the song, and then the topping off of the guitar solo at the end. I'm going You Can't Kill Rock and Roll.
Rich?
You Can't Kill Rock and Roll by a landslide. The intro with a classical guitar with layered with electric, layered with Don Airey's keyboard parts, the playing as one, absolutely stunning, so much vibe, so unique. Again, that's the thing I'll keep going back to on Diary of a Madman. Everything is so unique. You would never hear You Can't Kill Rock and Roll on anybody else's record. Such a unique song.
Great call.
And as you said, the chorus lyrics are so good.
Yeah.
And closing it by It's Here to Stay.
Yeah.
You know, it's his declaration of I'm the new president of rock and roll, and I'm telling you. And another great... thing about the outro solo is it started the trend with every young dude who loves guitar solos, and that you crank the ending until you just can't hear any more of it. It's a really long fade. Yeah. Now, like pop songs today, the fades are pretty quick. This is a really long fade, and it's really well done.
It would catch you if you didn't turn it back down in time. The next song would blast your ears off, because you would turn up so loud to just hear the end of it. They'd be like, ba-boom. It's funny, too, because we're on tour with Hardcore Superstar, and they actually have jackets with You Can't Kill My Rock and Roll. And, of course, when I see them, I'm like, well, that's just an Aussie ripoff, you know?
Frank? Second verse introducing the low octave vocal, which then has been stolen by everybody on the planet.
Wow.
It's into the eyes of no looking at that little bit.
Like, overdue.
And that's a super cool studio technique that Axl Rose has written many checks on.
And Matt Shadows too now.
Lots of guys. Yeah. Okay, and then let's just go why Goodbye to Romance should be never heard again. Jazz chords.
Yeah.
Anytime someone plays a major 7 or a jazz chord in a rock, I want him gone.
Jazz chords, like, not metal.
Not metal. Yeah, so I love the lyrics. As you said, the lyrics are amazing. I'd love to hear those lyrics reimagined on another piece of music.
Well, it's one of those things, too, that Ozzy's actually played Goodbye to Romance. There was that one live Zach album from the early 90s, Live and Loud, I think, where he played.
Yeah, Live and Loud. That was the first. Was that the first farewell tour he did?
Yeah, maybe? That was his retirement. Oh, yeah, the No More Tours tour.
Yeah,
that was it. But I remember just hearing that on there. It's like, this is just. And that was on cassette, so I couldn't afford it. I used to listen to that piece of shit over and over. Frank?
I'm going to, of course, give it to You Can't Kill Rock and Roll. Although I'm a little bit more neutral on both of these songs,
well,
I think,
than
everybody
else. Goodbye to Romance needs some help here.
Well, I was going to say, I actually think that from a songwriting perspective, Goodbye to Romance has a better chorus melody. I think the Beatlesque kind of melody that he wrote is catchy, and it's more of a chorus than You Can't Kill Rock and Roll. So I'll give it points for that.
Okay.
And
point taken.
Yeah.
Point Fonseray.
Right. But you know, for all the reasons everybody else was stating, I probably have to give it overall to You Can't Kill Rock and Roll. Although I have to say, for me, it's not as much of a landslide as it is for everybody else.
Deducted.
I'm a little bit more ambivalent about both these songs. I neither one of them really
you
like
don't feel it like.
Yeah, I mean, I like them both.
I smoke old ports listening to
right.
Them
no, this song doesn't have. I mean, they're both good. The songs don't have as much meaning to me as everybody else does. One of them, you know, like to me, You Can't Kill Rock and Roll doesn't bash the other one over the head and win.
Okay.
But if you asked me which one, like right now, if you could choose which one to listen to, I would choose You Can't
and
Kill
like
Rock and
Roll. And like we said, D is exempt. This should be a decent battle, though. It's Suicide Solution versus Believer, the side one killer track ending it off. Gosh, I don't even know who wants to start with this one. Anybody have...
I'll go straight in for Suicide Solution. It's not that close for me. I think Believer's really good. Again, it's funny how... Once you got them all written down, you realize how similarly structured both albums are.
It's back down just like to that Master kind of and Ride, yeah.
More like stomping, ploddy kind of song.
Yeah.
But Suicide Solution, it's just, funnily enough, for this album over the other, a bit unusually, it just feels a bit darker, a bit more sinister. I think the lyrics are amazing. I think they're probably the best lyrics on this album. I know Ozzy said they were originally written about Bon Scott, but then Bob Daisley was like, nah, dude, they're about you. It's about that kind of pushing the envelope. And
what's the word to as you ask from your cask? Is there life after birth? Meaning, as you ask from your casket,
yeah,
like from the grave.
It's awesome, and it's all about like you know, alcoholism and addiction and the dangers of that and all that kind of stuff.
A solution obviously, it got being like a drink,
exactly.
It's the suicide drink.
Yeah, of course, and it famously got misinterpreted by idiots. Because of, you know, one unfortunate situation. But for me, it's like, I mean, Believe is a great song as well. It's a great song. But Suicide Solution is one of, like, I think one of the best songs across these two albums.
All right, I think Rich is going to fire on this one. What you got, Rich? You got to check your notes first?
I'm good.
Mike.
Sorry. You start to get casual. Like, it's just like five good friends hanging out.
Which it is.
Yeah.
Just speaking of the Mike.
Yeah, sorry about that. Okay, so this is closer than I'd like to give it. I am going to go with Believer, and the reason I'm going to go with Believer is once again for the producer, songwriter in me that loves what is going on in Believer. Suicide Solution is a great riff. Down, bow, bow, down, bow, bow, down. Great. Great riff. Take nothing
away.
That's
a great riff, man.
That's a good riff, man.
Actually, we played that in the early Fozzy.
Yes,
really
we did.
Early Fozzy did.
And there's some cool things in there, like they leave in Ozzy's like bad vocals. Take me away tomorrow. Like in
emotional depth.
I agree. But I'm saying most people would have redid it. I think it actually is better that it's like tortured and but here's the deal about Believer. That you listen to the guitar riff in the verse of Believer, and it is absolutely one of the most genius riffs in the history of metal. I mean, it is, and because not only is it technical and busy, but it also stays out of the way of Ozzy's vocals. It is a perfectly composed part. And as a musician, you're always looking at ways to push yourself and create interesting things that give you a thumbprint. Like, a million artists could have written the riff for Suicide Solution. It could have ended up on a Jackal record or... I'm not kidding you. It's a blues rock
dude,
riff.
Come
bow,
on.
Bow, bow, now. Okay? I'm not saying. I love the riff.
Chainsaw,
but it's not,
solo over top
it's
of
not
it.
Super unique, whereas the riff in Believer says Randy Rhoads.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing that I'm... I keep going back to is that...
that there is something magical going on in Randy and how he's evolving as a player and how he's learning to do things that other guitar players don't even think like. Because they're thinking like Suicide Solution. It's a riff. It's a cool chord progression and stuff. Yeah. Whereas Eddie Van Halen and Randy Rhoads were doing things light years ahead of other people. They had moved on.
Even now.
Yes. Oh, yeah. They moved on from what Iommi had laid the groundwork for, and now we're pushing this through a crazy wormhole. And I think I did write some stuff around Believer, which I have to say, one of my favorite parts about it is that not only is it unique, but Daisley is a star in this song. Like, his bass playing is so cool because, remember, he's still playing boom, bow, boo, doo, doo, down, bum, ba, doo, da, da, doo, doo, down, bum. So it is like a well put together. It's not just guys playing a riff together. And that's what, again, like, you start to see the evolution of these guys, their writing, and how they are really becoming something special as a band. The guitar solo, Believer, crazy, out of this world, amazing. But it really does come down to the complexity and the masterful songwriting. For me, that. Because when I'm listening to things, I'm not just listening to it as, of course, Crazy Train, I would always say is one of the best rock songs ever written. I'm looking at this through the prism of how Diver Madman started to change the way guitar players started to look at things, because there was something magical that was influencing legions of new young guitar players.
And I'm going to go with Believer as well, adding to what you say. That is the perfect example of me of the maturity and the kind of the prog influence of the band going from like the rock element, which I agree with, but especially Bob Daisley, because I'm a bass player by heart. And that riff is so great, and it comes out of nowhere. And then that opening, as I don't know if it's harmonics on the guitar or whoever Randy's playing around that. And actually, Rob Trujillo told me just 2 days ago or 3 days ago when I saw him, we were talking about his time in Ozzy. He said he was the guy that for that Budokan show, got Ozzy to play it again. And I asked him, what was the hardest Ozzy song to play? And he said, Believer was the hardest one to play as a bass player. And Rob ain't no joke, as we all know.
And going back to, that's why the songs aren't in the set. People are always like, well, these are the classic songs. It's like, just because they don't want to go into the rehearsal space for 5 months to tighten up and play this material, it gets left off, because when bands get older, they have lives, they have kids and grandkids, and they have side businesses, and they do things. It's like, whereas a young band like Avenged Sevenfold is willing to spend the time to go in and rehearse and play the difficult material. Older guys are, and I am an older guy, by industry standards, and as we get older, we don't think in terms, it's not as competitive. We don't look at it as a prize fight like younger kids do. And I think that's why a lot of these songs get left off, because it requires more time to pull them into the set.
I also like the old, I know, yeah, yeah. Frank?
I got to give it to Believer as well. Although this is another close one for me. I'm conflicted, because there's a part of me that wants to say Suicide Solution, because I think it's a great song, and I just wonder if I'm being influenced by the fact that it's been in the set, that it's considered a classic.
So much,
Is that like kind of hypnotizing me to think it's a better song than it is? First of all, let me say that I'm probably inclined to pick almost everything on Diary, because I just like the production of the album so much better. I like the sound. There's a crispness and a separation to the instrumentation that appeals to me much more than Blizzard. Just as a sonic experience, Blizzard falls a bit flat for me.
Right.
Can I? And I'm going to jump in real quick. Just give me 2 seconds.
Sure.
And a perfect example is at the end of Suicide Solution, they're trying to milk a fade, but Lee Kerslake stops, and it just kind of falls apart. Like,
great,
it's literally
call.
At the end.
That's
it's
a good,
like,
point. Yeah, I didn't think of,
like,
that.
Like, because you could tell they're milking the fade. It's going, and then all of a sudden Kerslake stops, and it's kicker girl. And it
wah wah.
Yeah. So those are the things that, like you said, you would have recut, but maybe Kerslake had a great performance. They wanted to keep that bit.
Yeah.
But it's something that if you had more time and you had a little bit more of a taskmaster as a producer, you may have tried to cut it a couple more times. So, to your point.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I know we're going song by song, so not to get ahead of myself, but I think, you know, there might be stronger melodies on Blizzard that, like, that appeal to a mass audience more, you know? And I think Blizzard is more of an audience record, and Diary is more of a musician's record.
I think that's quite clear from a lot of the
and
stuff
that's
we said.
Still
so
plays all those songs live.
Yeah, so. That's why many more of the songs from Blizzard tend to be more in the set, because they just have that kind of, you know, the average person who doesn't play anything, and that's not to sound like, you know, elitist or anything, but, you know, when it comes to music and people who don't really have any kind of a musical background, it's like things
they're
either appeal to
journalists.
Them. Yeah, well, people, things either appeal to them or they don't. You play something for somebody, they either like it or they don't. They don't necessarily can't say why. It's just like, oh, I like that. And I think the songs on Blizzard, if you played them for somebody who's never heard either album and just an average person who doesn't have any, you know, musical background or whatever, they would probably choose the songs on Blizzard just because melodically there's something about them that is a little bit more mainstream. Maybe.
Once again, Suicide is way better live than on the record because it's got that breakdown with the solo. And I'll never forget Ozzy grabbing Jake's hair as he's doing it. Billy, what's yours?
Mine, I'm going to go with Believer from the intro into the verse riff is just freaking brutal, along with the beat that's laid down behind that riff and the melodies that Ozzy is singing. And then once you get into the bridge section and you start getting into the guitar work that's going on, there's lots of acoustic layering. You know, you got a layer of steel string acoustic, a layer of nylon string acoustic, and it's so orchestral, and then it has a great solo, and I'm going Believer.
So this to me is where it starts distancing itself between the two records. The second side, it starts off with Mr. Crowley versus Little Dolls, and I'm gonna start. Mr. Crowley shits all over it. It's Mr. Crowley, dude. It's one of the most classic Ozzy. It's proggy, it's dark, it's weird. I still don't know where it's polemically said.
Polemically,
what the hell does that mean? I still don't know. I think it's all of us know who Mr. Crowley is specifically because of Ozzy.
Yep.
I think anybody on this bus would agree with that. And I'm going to leave you with this. Zach told me when they were recording No More Tears, he had a poster of Jimi Hendrix on his wall in the studio and a poster of Mr. Crowley. And Ozzy came in and said, "Hey, Zach, I see a picture of Hendrix on the wall. Who's the other guy, man?"
That's amazing.
He goes, "Oz, that's Mr. Crowley. You've been singing about fuses." "I never seen him before, man." So, I'm going with Crowley with the keyboard intro, which is amazing. The end solo, everything, Crowley wins. Billy?
Hands down, Mr. Crowley. Just everything about that one is quintessential Ozzy to me. Like you said, he introduced the world to who Aleister Crowley was. Didn't even know it, actually. Yeah. But and the guitar work on it, me being a guitarist, I absolutely love it. Great, great solo. You know, the breakdown after the first bridge and everything. I'm going Mr. Crowley on that one. No Bone Movies was always a skipper for me on the Diary.
Little Dolls.
Oh, Little Dolls. Sorry, I didn't mean to get mixed up there. Little Dolls, I didn't really get into. That was one of the skippers on Diary for me. I liked the music, but, you know, I didn't connect with it well. So, Mr. Crowley.
And Little Dolls is a great riff. It's really cool. But to me, I think besides the I think Mr. Crowley is everybody knows that part in the song. Merlin, what do you think?
It's just no competition. One of the greatest songs ever written. Shout out for the Live and Loud version as well with the "Let me see your cigarette lighters." It's one of my favorite Aussie moments ever.
Yeah.
Yeah, no contest. Nothing to add, really. It's just...
And seeing... It's funny. I saw Don Airey the other day, once again, at Metallica. And I was like, "Yeah, this is Don Airey from Deep Purple." And I was like, "Screw that." And Lars like, "No, it's the keyboard player from Rainbow." I'm like, "No, it's the keyboard player from Ozzy, man. That's my generation of Don Airey. And I don't know who wrote that part. I would assume Don Airey did." And that's... Hopefully he got songwriting credit on that and just put...
I think he might not have, you know, but I think he did. I think he did write it.
You think Randy wrote that part? And Rich, do you know anything about that? Or?
Yes, he wrote it. I've seen him in interviews talk
Randy
about it.
Or
no,
Don?
No. Don wrote it.
Did he get credited?
I don't know. No. I mean, it's an intro. So the thing is that is the most famous keyboard piece in all of heavy metal.
What about Jump?
No, I won't call it Jump heavy metal.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, yeah.
But other than that, I got to go with you on that one. Yeah. I played it on Marcy Wood's fingers. Rich, what do you think?
Yeah, it's definitely Mr. Crowley, and here's my.
I'm glad you say that because I thought you might get pretentious on me here.
No. Okay. But here's why: Mr. Crowley is the breadcrumbs for Diary of a Madman.
Oh,
it is the gateway.
Nice.
It's the gateway into that. That's where I think when they wrote Mr. Crowley, I think that was all of these guys playing that song live and recognizing that this was such a unique song, and that it then became kind of the blueprint moving forward of that kind of dark and Randy's move from Quiet Riot rock guitar player into classical guitar hero.
Yeah.
And that was really the gateway, because the solo of Mr. Crowley obviously is one of the greatest in history. And again, it was Ozzy entering Evil Meatloaf territory. You could actually see him on stage. The performance, it's so animated in the way he's telling the story that, you know, especially in the bridge vocal, it's like you could just see him acting it out. I mean, I really feel like you're watching.
I always felt like Ozzy, like his singing in Sabbath and on this song and some other Ozzy songs, he sounded like the most lonely person on earth, and Satan is standing beside him waiting to take him to hell as soon as he's done the track. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just so like wailing and the gnashing of teeth and all those biblical terms.
One of those little things about Ozzy that people don't really still remember, just how kind of sinister and like
how much
off kilter
he
was.
Part. Yeah.
Another great production thing, the two click sticks left in. I love that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
When for
after Mr. Crowley.
Oh, bam.
Like you actually hear the click.
Yeah,
click. You actually hear the, you know, Lee, and I love that stuff. It makes you feel like it's just a studio record.
Yeah.
The drummer is in.
Yeah, he's
you know.
In on it. You're talking about Randy's solo and that, and Don Airey. I still remember US Festival 83, and it's Don Airey and Jakey Lee at the time. They double the solo together, and I don't think they did that any other time. Ozzy must not have liked it, but it's almost like a Deep Purple or a Dream Theater where they're doubling each other. It's really cool because you can really hear the keyboard in the mix too.
And to match Randy doubling and tripling all his solos.
Yeah.
Little Dolls, I love it. I actually really like the I love the double drums in the intro.
Yeah.
I think it's really cool.
Oh, yeah, the double snare.
Yeah, and I love the bass lick. You know, in the pre-chorus, I think Little Dolls is a great song, but it's the actually only song that I would give a B to.
Oh, like, so it's not the perfect album.
Yeah, it's a B plus. It's the only thing that keeps Diary for me from being a perfect album.
Now, Frank, you've been sitting with a really goofy look on your face the whole time. What's going on?
I have to say that Mr. Crowley's always been one of my least favorite Ozzy songs.
Nice.
Yeah. Always one.
I like the contrarian opinion here. That's what we need.
I think everything that
we need an asshole on the panel.
I'm not going to try to invalidate anything that anybody said about it. It just doesn't do anything for me.
Okay.
And like I said, I'm not going to sit here and say it's a bad song or anything like that, but it's one of those things, if I'm ever watching an Ozzy set or if I'm watching like a live video or something like that, as soon as I hear that first keyboard note, my eyes kind of just roll back in my head and I go, oh boy, fast forward. I mean,
savage.
Yeah. I mean,
savage.
Yeah. It just, I find it, I'm not, you know, but first of all, I'm not a guitar player.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm not a guitar player and, you know, I'm not a producer. I'm not, you know, I can understand that there's probably, you know, stuff about this song that would appeal to some, you know, that has appealed to, you know, somebody who is more versed in maybe the classical elements of music. And so I get it. I understand. But it just, for me, it just feels kind of meandering and boring and uninteresting. It's not like I'm not.
So talk about Little Dolls. What?
And it's Little Dolls. I agree with Rich. I think it's the kind of the song on the album that gets a B. I mean, let me be clear. I mean, all this stuff is great.
Of course.
We're I'm
We've
just
said
comparing.
That enough.
Yeah.
We're having a conversation here.
Okay. Sorry. I didn't mean to offend you. But I do love that doubled drum stroke that opens that song. I
think so it's, cool.
Yeah, it's just such a great way to open a song. It's so signature. I mean, there's nothing like it anywhere else. There's nothing like it. And the lyrics and his vocal on Little Dolls are just so writhing and screaming, the pain just won't go. It's like, oh my god,
that's creepy, you know? Ozzy.
Yeah, that's creepy as hell.
Creepy Ozzy. Very high.
Yeah. So, again, I'd have to go with Little Dolls just because I've never been a big
All
Mr.
Right,
Crowley
so now
fan.
We get to this is an interesting one because to me, No Bone Movies might be the one that keeps this from being a perfect album. I would say No Bone Movies might be a B plus. So it's No Bone Movies versus Tonight. Now I'll start this one. I did not like Tonight when I was a kid, because it was a ballad, and you know, you just gotta rock, man. You gotta rock. As an adult listening to Tonight, I think it's a genius song with another amazing fade out on guitar, which that was actually brought to my attention when you see the 30th anniversary of those albums. They did the box set, and I think it was Chirko sitting with Ozzy going over it, and he said, I always love the fade out at the end, and Ozzy hadn't heard it since then, and turning up the fader to hear Randy's solo as it goes out, it's one of the best parts of the record. So Tonight is great, to the point where I even insisted that our song Tonight was spelt differently, because I did not want to have a song called Tonight competing with Ozzy and Randy's Tonight. So that's why, if anybody noticed, it was T-O-N-I-T-E. No Bone Movies, I think it's a great party rock song. I can almost, like, it's almost like a Van Halen vibe where you can hear guys in the background hanging out, like, drinking, like, I think it's like there's people in the studio and they didn't clear them out. And I never knew what a Bone Movie was until maybe 10, 15 years ago. It's a porno. So no pornos. You never knew that, Frank? Yeah.
I did not know that.
I suspected as much, but now I think about it, I never looked into it.
A Bone Movie would be bone. You're boning the chick, a Bone Movie.
What's a porno?
Yeah, I've heard about them.
Somebody told me about it one time.
You can find them online or something. Yeah. So I'm going with Tonight, not a landslide, because I like No Bone Movies, but I just don't think it's a perfect song like the rest of the songs. Well, actually, there's a couple in there. But anyway, so I'm going with Tonight. Billy?
I'm going with Tonight by a landslide. No Bone Movies was one of my least favorites by Ozzy, but that's just opinion. Tonight got me from the get-go with the orchestration, the guitars, and the melody of the chorus. It got me as a kid. It still gets me now, and there's, you know, it's one of the best songs on that record to me. And they used to, once again, that's a song I heard on the radio as a kid. They used to play that.
Wow.
And I would have to sit there and listen for hours to hear these songs. But, you know, I would hear that song and it would always stay stuck in my head. And then, once again, at the end, you had Randy Rhoads ripping it up. And that just put the icing on the cake. So, for me, I'm going Tonight.
Frank?
Yeah, I'm definitely going with Tonight as well. No Bone Movies is it just seems like a track that it was like, well, what else have we got? You know, like, we need more songs on this record. What else have we got? Well, we got this one. Put it on there.
Yeah.
You know, so it's okay, but not, you know, it's doesn't really do much for me. I think Tonight is a much better song, obviously. I think it's a really underrated Ozzy song. I think it's one of his better vocal performances, you know.
I think it was underrated because, like I said, like for me, and I'm sure there was lots like me when I was a kid, it starts slow, and that always just turned me off right away.
Yeah, but I mean, I love the
song.
The key change that go the key change where they go into the guitar solo is genius, man.
Great bass,
I mean,
playing on it,
oh, it's just amazing. That's such a great change, and just in terms of crafting and structure, just so much better song. It's kind of like the Rolling Stones always had songs that they really worked on and songs that they just kind of jammed out.
Yeah.
And No Bone Movies to me sounds like one that they just kind of jammed on and was like, that's fun, let's put it on the record. Yeah. Whereas Tonight is, there's a much more thoughtful song, and just, you can tell they took their time to get this one really right. And Merlin? I'm surprised it's not more of a classic Ozzy song.
Merlin?
I'd probably go with Tonight. Just, I do really like No Bone Movies. I agree, it's kind of a bit more, it's kind of like just basic. Like you said, kind of, you could see it almost just being a song that just gets played in the background of like a high school scene in a film or something, people are just drinking.
Party song.
Yeah, definitely. But I do still really like it as well.
Did you think a Bone Movie was?
I don't think I never really thought about it. And then when you kind of, when you just said, you know what it stands for, I kind of thought, is it a porn thing? Or like, is it
maybe
boning?
Did Sharon ban Ozzy from watching porno movies.
Yeah, like, just this bit. A little
yeah, my porno movies.
Yeah.
And yeah, funny, kind of like you said, Chris, when I first heard Tonight coming off having got into Tribute and all the kind of faster, like bigger songs on that, I thought Tonight was like, I found it a little bit boring. It's quite a long song. It's like 6 minutes.
Yeah, good call.
So it's something that I took a while to get into, but now, you know, having come back to it over and over again over the years, I think it's definitely more of an accomplished work.
It's 5 minutes and 50 seconds.
Right, exactly. So,
Rich, bring up
Tonight by Lionslide. It's one of my favorite Ozzy songs.
Tonight?
Yeah, absolutely. Also, I really think that a great sign of an amazing ballad I think this is a song that could be re-recorded by Beyonce and it would be a hit. It's got such a great melody.
I'd love to hear that.
It would be amazing, right? I mean, it's a perfect song. It has a perfect lyric. Daisley, again, walking the dog like the madman he is. Don Airey's total star. And Randy Rhoads playing some octaves, very Brian May. You can see that this song's kind of different from his wheelhouse. So you can see him finding where his role is in this stuff. And he's doing some unique stuff in there that I think is really cool. No Bone Movies. I had to write a long soliloquy about
your notes, man.
This freaking. I've always hated this song. It's a dumb blues jam. It's dumb lyrics. A pulsating gland is a lyric in the song. Yeah, it's like the ultimate eye roller of all lyrics. A pulsating gland would never make the Rich Ward gatekeeper of lyrics.
Or don't worry, it's not coming out of the Chris Jericho camp either, I'll tell you that much.
Well, there goes the song Pulsing Gland that I was going to suggest for the next record.
Yeah, and this one just happens to come after Mr. Crowley. Yeah. So just by default, it's the ugly chick in the room standing next to Cindy Crawford in 86. And Randy Rhoads plays a slide solo? Come on. I mean, like, it's straight. It's like, he can't be Randy. He has to be from Lynyrd Skynyrd because it wouldn't work.
Yeah.
So he's playing out of position. It's a shitty solo. If I played slide, I'd still say, I got you on this one. And I suck at slide, too. Hey, sorry, Randy. You're still the greatest.
Well, there you go, man. So I'm going to do a little cheating here, too. I'm going to do a flip-flop because technically it's Revelation Mother Earth versus SATO, but I think it's more apt to have Revelation Mother Earth versus Diary because they're both very epic songs. So let's go Steal Away the Night against SATO. And I'm going to tell a quick story about Ozzy. When I met Ozzy, I asked him, I had my fanboy question. What does NIB mean? And he told me it doesn't stand for not in body. It stands for Nib because his drummer at the time had a beard like the nib of a pencil and it was called Nib. So then I was like, oh, wow. So what does SATO stand for? Does it stand for Sail Across the Ocean? Like we had always said. He goes, no. I was having lunch with me and my ex-wife and Sharon and her ex-husband. Said I didn't have a title, so I called it Sharon Allen Thelma and Ozzy. He sat there literally for 10 seconds trying to remember the name of his fucking ex-wife. Sharon Allen Thelma and Ozzy. So from Ozzy in 2009, that's what this song stands for. Frank?
Definitely SATO for me. That opening kind of slow pounding, you know, rhythm, you know, and then it just charges up into that kind of triplet feel. I mean, I can actually like it actually visually for me invoked like imagery, you know.
Yeah.
Of like, you know, sailing across the ocean.
Of Sharon and Alan.
Not of them having lunch. But just that. I mean, it's a metal song. Steal Away the Night is okay. It's a metal song too. But yeah, I just. SATO for me, for sure.
Okay. Rich?
SATO, without a doubt, it's one of Ozzy's best B-sides for sure. Has a great pre-chorus. And here's the thing is, that song has tons of energy. Yeah. And that's the one thing about it is that, and if you listen to the guitar solo in that song, what Bob Daisley's playing under the solo is so crucial. He's driving so much energy into that. Again, it's at a band in peak form, like an athlete that wins every gold medal at the Olympics.
Yeah.
It's like this is a band who is fully realized and is playing at the peak of their performance, and again, I'm listening to it through that prism because "Steal Away the Night" is a great song.
Yes,
it's like I give them both; they're both great songs. I'm only giving SATO an advantage based on performance,
and the band just, it's just driving. And like Frank said, I believe every word that Ozzy's yes. got that. Like he has that thing where he's just like in full Ozzy yeah, mode. Yeah, yeah. It's that strained panic, you know, connecting with every word. So I'm giving it by a hair.
I love SATO. I think it's one of my favorite Ozzy songs, but I'm going to go with Steal Away the Night because it's also one of my favorite Ozzy songs. I know we're not using it as the closer here because we're doing the epic, but it was a great way to close off that record. And it's what Rich was saying before, used to his advantage. It's a rock and roll song. It's a great rock and roll song. It's got a great riff. And the chorus is huge. To me, I can't believe that song isn't played as it had potential to be a classic Ozzy song. And I always loved that it was Steal Away the Night in brackets. And I just love that title. To me, once again, it's 9.99999 and a 10. And I'll go with Steal Away the Night, which I could just as easily win SATO, but I think everyone else is probably going to go with SATO, so I'll be Steal Away the Night. I just think it makes for a better conversation.
That's kind of like King of the Night. Time world.
Okay, so for all production nerds out there who I'm not going to let this go, the harmony in the chorus of Steal Away the Night is louder than the lead line.
Steal away!
And every time I hear it, it's like, somebody grab the fader! Pull it! Because back then, mixing was an art. It wasn't done in a computer where you could, like, it was four or five people with hands on the mixing console and fingers on buttons on the rack. So a mix was a performance back then. Everybody was like doing their little motions, and you'd have pieces of tape on the mixing console to know, push the guitar up at this moment, but don't push it past this line, then pull it back to this point. And you can tell that on a lot of songs, they would have had maybe 10 or 12 passes of every mix, and they would choose
which
performance of the mix. And I always hear that part,
turn
the fader down on the backing vocal.
I also love the bass on that part, on that song. It's Bob Daisley, man. What a rocker.
Can I just say, like, I think the ending of SATO is one of my favorite endings, how it builds up to that crescendo and then to just bam. And then they fade on that.
They fade straight.
Did Van Halen copy them or did vice versa?
On which song?
Because Van Halen has a da da.
Was that the end of DOA? Da-da. Is it?
Yes.
End of DOA?
Oh, yeah. Well, then they probably. That came out before first. DOA came
but
out.
Also,
before.
It's so
but,
effective.
But also the fade straight into the acoustic part of Dire.
But yeah,
brilliant.
Yeah. But on DOA. They're doing those hits, but he's doing the scratch in between it.
You know, it's funny because in Canada, you had to be, is it DOA by Van Halen, or are you talking about Ronnie James Dio?
Oh.
I mean, a DOA.
I'm going to go with...
little Canadian
go
humor.
SATO.
Way to go, Bill.
I got
to
go with that one. But I do have to say the opening riff of Steal Away the Night... It's pretty freaking badass.
It's badass.
It
High
really
five
is
on that
badass.
One. Yeah.
I mean, I got to give him credit.
And the flanger tones.
Yes. I mean, it's you know, it's a great song too. But for me, SATO once again has that energy. Ozzy, they capture his attitude and it, like Frank says, it gives you some imagery, you know. So
when he says,
"Is this voyage coming to an end?"
And it's just like he, that tone of voice that he does, it sounds like his life is ending
once again
in front of the microphone.
Satan is waiting for him to take him to hell.
Yeah, exactly. It sounds his voice, that inflection that he uses at times is just so like you it know, gives it's bone chilling. It sounds like somebody's soul is being
taken
away.
It's no bone chilling. And I'll say this too, we went and saw Ozzy last weekend. He had a couple rough moments vocally, but dude, that guy is such a great singer. I mean, one of the best rock singers.
One of the most underrated fundamental singers ever.
And the reason why people slag him off is because his melody lines are so high. That's why. It's like Paul Stanley trying to sing 80s Kiss. You can't do it when you get into your late 60s and 70s. Merlin.
Totally agree. This is one of the closer ones for me, especially since we switched them up. I really like SATO. They're both quite fast songs. I like the fact that SATO's got the Maiden Fanboy. It's got a tiny little bit more gallop in it, which I'm always like into. Yeah. But I would probably go for Steal Away the Night just because it's a bit more urgent. It's a bit more like it's a song that's so on the edge, it's almost running away with itself.
He's stealing away the night. Exactly. I don't know what that means,
but
he's
feel it kind
he's
of.
He's running through the night, escaping with whatever he needs to escape.
And I love that.
away.
Yeah.
Tonight.
But I will admit that I'm a little bit biased because, again, Tribute was the first thing of Randy I heard. And
he
that's one of the best
songs. He played that on that album, didn't
crushes
he?
Crushes it, yeah.
Wow.
It sounds so amazing
did
as well.
He used to play it live. Yeah. Gosh, that'd be great if he busted that out, you know? Yeah, forget absolutely. About, like, you know, Fire in the Sky or Killer of Giants. Yeah, like, play freaking Steal Away the Night.
No, he needs to bust out SATO. That's what he needs to bust out.
But once again, way too high. Yeah. Super high. But let's go to the ultimate showdown now. This is not easy. It's Revelation, Mother Earth versus Dire of a Madman, which is the two epic songs on the record. Revelation does not close the album like Diary does. Billy, why don't you start this one off?
I love both of the songs, and I'm going to go, I'm going to say that I think Revelation Mother Earth was kind of like a prelude.
Did I say Revelation Life or Death? I meant Revelation Mother Earth. Yeah,
you said it.
Yeah, he's good. So Revelation Mother Earth was kind of like a prelude to the Diary of a Madman album, where he was introducing that classical influence into the songs, and just such a great solo along with it, but... And in the end, I'm going to go with Diary of a Madman because he had all those elements, but everything from the intro guitar part to just to the chorus and the intro going into the heavy part and then to the solo was an absolute hook for me. It really just hooked me, like got me from the get-go and made me want to pick up the classical guitar. That's what made me want to get into that. And like I said, Revelation Mother Earth was brilliant too. But I think it paved the way for Diary of a Madman.
Oh man, I was definitely more biased towards Revelation Mother Earth for years because I liked the lyrics. I liked the fact that he's taking this big world view. It was quite an unusual.
Very political for us.
Quite unusual for him. Quite unusual for what was going on in a lot of metal at the time as well, I think.
Good call.
But I think on balance, Diary is the better song. It's such a spectacular finish. From a kind of semi-emotional standpoint as well, like Randy's last kind of... like
right.
You know, salute song almost, in a way, yeah. Which of course it wasn't intended to be, but it, like you said, it,
I get that feeling.
Talking about a lot of the stuff we were doing, like earlier on, Rich, when you talked about him hinting towards Brian May stuff and like all that kind of stuff, the stuff he was doing on that song in particular just makes you think what could have been, and it's just it was such an epic way to kind of round off those two albums. So for years, I would have definitely said Revelation, but I think realistically, you have to say Diary is the better song.
I think Revelation is one of his most underrated. I think people forget about it. That guitar solo in the middle is genius. Yep. The vocal is great. But to me, Dire of a Madman could be my favorite Ozzy Osbourne song out of all of them. It is the epitome of who Ozzy is as a vocalist. I know he didn't write the lyrics, but the dark lyrics, the Diary of a Madman. I mean, we hear that so much. What a great fucking song title.
Things with
Diary
was like,
of a Madman.
He didn't write a lot of the lyrics, but the way he delivered
them. He sings them.
Was,
you know,
so,
I didn't
so,
write the lyrics for Judas.
No, but that's what I mean. Like,
yes.
He delivers them
he
so well.
He is a madman. The Diary of a Madman, the solo, and the like you said, Frank, the fade out of SATO into the, or Sato, as I thought it was called when I was a kid. As a Japanese thing or something.
I thought it was Sato.
Sato.
It's a nickname for Satan. Hey, Sato, what's up, man?
Sato, what's happening, man?
Bleeding into that acoustic part. And it's also, is it a 6/8? What's the tempo on that?
It's the... It's a bar of nine. It's one bar of nine and a bar of eight.
There you go.
So it's a bar of nine.
It's out of time.
Right. It's a bar of 9/8 and a bar of 4/4.
But then the end part of that. Like gives me, I got chills.
Yeah.
Probably because it's freaking cold in here, but also.
We are in Newcastle.
It's from that. And so Dire of a Madman. Oh, what a song. And like you said, Marone, the final performance from Randy Rhoads, he might have played that first in the recording session, but it's the last song we heard, and it is the perfect Requiem swan song, what could have been, but look what we have. Dire of a Madman, to me, I don't want them to play it live because I don't want to hear any other version other than the one that I have in my head right now.
Yep.
Frank.
I'm glad you came to me next because I think that's a perfect point. You can't top that recording of that song, so don't even try to
hear live.
don't try to play it live because you got it. To me, I mean, this one is like the biggest knock out of the park, really? As far as I'm concerned. Absolutely. To me, as a work of art, Diary of a Madman is Ozzy's greatest achievement. You know, it's probably my favorite Ozzy song, just because it is just such a work of art. From the acoustic intro, Billy, you talk about haunting that acoustic intro, into those chords, the odd time, down into where it goes from there into the verses. It is, you know, again, visually so evocative and so. You know, it's just like, it's a work of art, man. And when
you hear the song, you can see it in your head.
Yeah,
it's like,
exactly.
It's like Hotel California. Like, I can see.
Yes, you see there's a film, that runs through your mind as you're listening to that
song. Yeah, his costume on the cover is the diary with the blood streaked and the creepy little kid. And, like, I see that in this song.
When, you know, the way we are used to experiencing music from, you know, when we were younger, you know, laying on your bed in your bedroom in the dark with those big, with the big headphones on, the big cans, listening to that on vinyl, and it transports you. You know, you're no longer in your bedroom listening. You are transported. And the ending, you know, that he used to use to open the show, he should never have gone away from that. That should be the way he opens
that's
the show.
Homage too, right?
Yeah, that melody. I mean, that's just like it's his greatest achievement as far as.
All right, Rich, I left you last.
Very interested to hear your assessment of this.
I'm not even going to even discuss Revelation Mother Earth because it's a perfect song. It's just
up against
the greatest album closer of all time.
Wow.
Yeah. And there's, to me, there's no song that closes an album more powerfully than Diary of a Madman.
Interesting.
And I think it is the prototype. If it wasn't for songs like Diary of a Madman, there would be no songs like One by Metallica. It really is that. It is the telling the story, the slow build into the heaviness, and it has such a dynamic, epic kind of prog quality to it. And the other thing about it is it has a couple of different interesting time signatures. The verses, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4. I mean, those are things that rock bands don't do. And I really think that it really opened the door to bands like Dream Theater. It really, I think.
Absolutely, without a doubt.
And it really helps to push bands like Maiden
Maiden, absolutely.
It helps
Maiden.
Because Maiden,
listen to the songs in 1981. What was Maiden doing in 81? They had elements of that.
They were a rock band.
That made it accessible.
Yeah, and, you know, I think also in that bridge section, it took elements of the Moody Blues and elements of Zeppelin.
Great riff in it too.
Yeah, and Deep Purple, and does it better than those bands. I mean, this is like a band in complete top form. And I would love to talk to the producer and find out who was scoring the strings.
Who produced those records?
Just unbelievable.
Norman did.
Yeah, he did.
Diary.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Revelation Mother Earth, that piano solo in the middle of it is beautiful. And I love the fact the lyrics, like you said, you don't hear that kind of stuff. It was, you know, it was thoughtful, but just that.
Let me give you one too. The solo in that, when it comes out, it's like, well, a squeal. It's only about a 2 or 3 bar solo. It's not long. Maybe 4 bars, but it's just so heavy and great. And it's almost like an outro to the middle section. You know, they didn't stuff, it's something that we've done on this record with Judas. We didn't stuff a solo in it just to put a solo in it. It's the perfect solo, didn't need to be 8 bars. And just for Max Norman did Diary, and Ozzy and the band did Blizzard.
And there she wrote.
And it is revealed.
So
there we go.
I think it's pretty obvious, but final assessment. Blizzard or Diary, once again, both great records, but I'm going Diary. Billy?
I'm going Diary.
Frankie?
By a large margin, Diary.
By a large margin?
Large
what
margin.
What does she have to do with this? leave your fans out of this.
Merlin? Besides a whole lot of Rosie.
Merlin?
I'm just trying to think what I did track for track. I think they're just about equal, but for me, it's probably going to be Blizzard.
Blizzard. Okay, because what now?
Just because I think overall it's just got the bigger songs are bigger. Like for me, when you're looking purely song for song, I don't know, Crazy Train, Mr. Crowley,
Suicide
Solution.
Still
yeah,
the
skeleton of that album is as good as anything that's ever been done, I think. So it's just just Blizzard for me.
Gotcha. Rich?
Yeah, and I agree with what Merlin's saying. Like, I could actually make an argument against myself.
Yeah.
You know, because what you said is a great closing argument.
It is valid, yeah.
It is. It is. Any attorney could make that argument and win the case. My preference is Diary for all of the reasons that I've stated. It is a band in top form, fully realized. The evolution had landed. They were something unique and special unto themselves. Nobody could make a record that sounded like Diary of a Madman. Some bands could have made Blizzard of Oz. I think Max Norman coming in as a taskmaster and doing what a proper producer is supposed to do, which is to take four amazing musicians and a great keyboard instrumentalist and say, you guys are great. Now let's just not settle. Let's do it better and let's work on it and refine it. And for me, that's what makes Back in Black the greatest AC/DC record. That's what makes my favorite God, you're gonna kill me. It makes my favorite Metallica album, the Black Album, because I love
that's not killing though. I can see that.
Yeah, I love I can see that. Power and power comes from perfection.
That's where Lars learned how to play drums, was on that record. To this day, he plays like Black Album. Yeah, you know?
I love hearing how Lee Kerslake and Bob Daisley are playing as an amazing rhythm section, and Randy had found his voice.
Right, and it's so funny too, because if you look at the album cover of Diary, it's got Rudy Sarzo and Tommy Aldridge on it. They did not play in the record. It was the same lineup. A couple last things. I just looked it up. So Blizzard sold 4 million records in the States. Diary sold 3. So it's not like Blizzard, even with all those hits, is an 8, 9, 10 million seller. It's still in the realm of what Diary did.
I think The Ultimate Sin might be his biggest selling album, which is really weird.
Wow, good call, which probably is really weird. That's when Ozzy became cool, though.
Can I make a case for Ozzy? I would not call him I wouldn't put him up there in the pantheon of the most amazing singers of all time. I would put him up there in the pantheon of greatest vocalists of all times.
Yeah, good call.
Because his vocal, because although, you know, he couldn't stand next to, a guy like Freddie Mercury and have chop for chops, that's not who Ozzy was. But when Ozzy's voice comes on the radio, it doesn't take but one note to say that's Ozzy. And that's the sign of a great artist, is they have a thumbprint, the same.
Absolutely. Note. Signature.
Signature voice. There's not another guy that sounds like Ozzy.
Right.
I will say that I don't think Ozzy ever had better performances than he did on Diary of a Madman. Mm. And I think part of that could be because of his elevated...
He was fighting for his life at that point in time.
Yeah. As an artist. Him, that was at a super critical point in his life, and he had one of the greatest bands on the planet with him, writing.
I was
going to
say, if I could possibly project onto something, obviously I don't know this, but you've got to remember as well, obviously, that Randy Rose died after that album, and that really hit him hard. Yeah. And I do think that would have affected his performances. You know, Jakey Lee was a great guitarist. There's some great songs on those albums, but I think Randy being there really put a fire under him.
And that's
that
also
helped as well.
That's why Rudy Sarzo left, because he couldn't be in the band without Randy anymore. Ozzy had no choice. He had to stay. Mm-hmm. You know, and going sales-wise, Bark did 3, Ultimate Sin did 2,
oh, really?
No More Tears was the 4.
Oh, okay.
4 million. Last story before we go, because we got to get to work. Ozzy hosted Raw, like I mentioned, and Santino Marella was dressed up as Ozzy on the cover of Diary of a Madman. You know, the white ripped up, you know, tassels. Yeah. And he walked by as I was talking to Ozzy, and Ozzy went, guy looks just like me, man. And I was like, well, that's the idea. He's dressed up as you. And Ozzy just went, far out. I think that's the last thing you ever said to me. Far out. So thank you guys. What a great debate.
Yes.
Thank you, Merlin, for making the trek all the way from London to Newcastle.
Me.
And it's time to go play some rock and roll.
Merlin, Merlin, Merlin,
me.
Merlin,
me. Me, Lynn. Thanks to the amazingly named Merlin Alderslade. What a great rock and roll name, Merlin Alderslade. And the rest of the dudes and Fozzy for weighing in on the classic album clash, Ozzy Osbourne edition. And if it's more Ozzy you're after, well, first of all, let me know, who do you think? Which album do you like better? Hit me up on the Twitter @TalkIsJericho. Do you like Diary of a Madman better? or do you like Blizzard of Oz better? Let me know. Check it out. Tell me. And let me know if you want to go on Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea. You can check out the world's greatest Ozzy Osbourne cover band, Blizzard of Ozzy. They might be playing the entire Blizzard of Oz and Dire of a Madman records. We don't know. If you want to find out, you can put down $150. That's all you need to book, put a deposit on your cabin at thechrisjerichocruise.com. $150. That's all you need to do. You got $150, you can reserve your cabin. That's all you need. And once you book that cabin, reserve it. Remember, you get everything else for free. Concerts, comedy shows, live podcasts, meet and greets, autograph signings, Blizzard of Oz performances. It's all free, including your food. It's free. And you'll be able to hang out and get pictures and get autographs from the incredible lineup of guests for free. Jim Ross, free. Jerry the King Lawler, free. SoCal Val, Mick Foley, Noel Foley, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, Ray Mysterio, Raven, Conan Disco, and Shane Helms, Keep It 100. Free to see them do their show live. Beyond the Darkness, telling some scary tales. Tim and Dave, it's free to get your the pants scared off you. Cole Cabana, Marty DeRosa doing the Unprofessional Wrestling Podcast for free. You get to see it for free. Don Callis and Paul Lazenby doing Killing the Town live. Pat Patterson, Karaoke Nights. Brad Williams, Craig Gass, Ron Funches, Sal and Q from the Practical Jokers, all performing for free. Busted Open, Dave LeGrec will be there. Corey Taylor from Slipknot, Stone Sour, Fozzy will be performing for free. Phil Campbell and the Bastard Sons, King, The Stir, The Dave Spivak Project, free. The Cherry Bumps, free. Shoot the Thrill, the world's best female AC/DC cover band, free. Blizzard of Ozzy, free. All for free. And you get to watch the entire Ring of Honor, Sea of Honor tournament for free. Matches happening in the middle of the ocean on the ship. And the winner of the Sea of Honor tournament gets a Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Championship shot in the future. Kenny Omega will be there. The Young Bucks will be there. Matt and Nick. The Villain, Marty Scurll, Briscoe Brothers, Dalton Castle, Frankie Kazarian, Adam Page, Chris Daniels, Jay Lethal, Cheeseburger, Mandy Leon, Kelly Klein, Matt Taven, Flip Gordon, Delirious, Beer City Brawler will be there. The Dogs will be there, man. Brian Cage, Melissa Santos, Cody Rhodes, Brandi Rhodes. What more do you want? We've got everything you want in rock and roll and wrestling. Go book your cabin now, ChrisJerichoCruise.com. If you don't want to be a part of this, then you're a stupid idiot. Come make history. Be a part of the first ever Chris Jericho Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea. ChrisJerichoCruise.com. We will see you there. And we'll see you on Friday. Because we got the guy who might have invented Talking Shop. Everyone loves Talking Shop. Who invented it? Luke Gallows? No. Carl Anderson? No. The Rotating Fourth? No. The guy who might have invented Talking Shop is Rocky Romero. He's in New Japan. He's in the New Japan office, and he might just have created Talking Shop. We're going to talk all about that on Friday. And in the meantime, and in between time, stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs, and a big... See you on Friday.